4:45, time for a message in the bottle on Downtown, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street, Bangor, right between Brahma Grill and Fiddlehead Restaurants. Eric Meehan here in studio with us. Hello, sir.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Fantastic.
It's
thank you.
Raining. It's snowing. It's time for Check Out That Package.
Yes.
Of wine.
Wine.
Of wine. Sorry, folks. There's no other way you can do this. When you start throwing around these words, you just feel like a five-year-old again. And I don't think I've ever actually matured since then. We're talking. It's March. We're talking about how wine gets to you. I kind of think it's time to give thought to why there's all these preconceived notions of what's better, what's worse. So we've talked a little bit in the past, and we'll talk again next week about different wine closures and stuff like that. We're going to talk about boxed wine. We're going to talk about wine in a can, which is now a big thing. People thought it was scandalous when they were putting beer back in cans. Now they're putting wine in cans. But today I figured we'd talk about the old traditional bottle and talk about how traditional it is or isn't, and talk kind of a little bit about the history of why that all ended up in there. And then we're going to taste a really, really good wine, because biodynamically, it's a fruit night. So anybody with a good bottle of wine at home, or if you don't have one, go buy one, because it's a really good night to drink a good bottle of wine.
I'm waiting. I'm being patient. I want to sample this so bad.
So glass, right? So humanity has been using glass. Glass naturally occurs right out of volcanoes. We get things like obsidian, right? Natural glass. And humans learned very, very early on that the edges that can be formed off of these natural pieces of glass were very, very useful for early cutting tools, things like that. So they were good for early humans to use, but we didn't really begin to embrace forming of glass and manipulation of glass and creation of glass until about 3000 BC, and there's evidence in northern Syria, if you can get there, and I wouldn't recommend it these days as an archaeological thing. But around 3000 BC, there's evidence of the first glass being made. And it was, initially for ceremonial things, decorative purposes. So it wasn't in any sort of vessel form, but that's the early evidence of humans actually creating something out of glass and creating glass itself. No, of course, it was our old friends, the Romans, who, as we all know, had kind of a thing for wine. It's kind of one of their lasting legacies. No, it was them who invented glass blowing and therefore creation of, vessels that could contain things. And of course, they started putting wine in those vessels. The problem of these early vessels, they were fairly thin. They weren't super great for transportation. And if they were going to be transported, they had to be packed in huge amounts of straw, stored upright, because of course, they didn't have ways to close them that were very convenient. So they had to, kind of come up with all these ways. And of course, you need to remember that a lot of these early Roman wines were all oxidized. So they were exposed on purpose, and they were, so they weren't the fresh, vibrant wines that we know today that are coming out of stainless steel containers and stuff like that. But of course, the Romans, as you may or may not know, were using primarily ceramic amphora for their wine storage, but it was them who got the whole concept of the bottle thing started. So when in the 17th century they developed coal burning furnaces, this allowed for much, much hotter temperatures in forges and allowed thicker glass to be produced. And that's what really created this much more durable bottle that we sort of, starts to make sense to us today. And you started to see actual use of it as a practical thing, and more common use of it as, not only amongst the very rich, but it was a much more common vessel, not just for wines, but for liquids of all kinds. And then, of course, around the same time on the Iberian Peninsula, so Portugal and Spain, and remember that most of this substance comes from Portugal, we had cork as a closure method for liquids. And so that all started to come together in the same time period. And of course, it was very much the French and the Gallic people who brought the cork to the bottle. And as the French would say, it all ended, it all started here, really. So that was really the origin of the bottle and the cork, and when people really started to go with that. But it took a long, long time from thence for bottles to become standardized. You had a lot. I mean, essentially every region had its own style. Glass blowers had their different styles. There was a lot of very bulbous and round bottles. And while those are really pretty, they weren't very, very good for long-term storage. And it wasn't until the early 1700s when people started to age wine and keep it and see how it went that you started to see them wanting to, as we've talked about many, many times, lay the bottle on its side, keep the cork moist so that it stayed, you know, thick and created a good seal. And so you started to see these round and more bulbous bottles go out of fashion in favor of longer, flatter-sided bottles with cork finish. And again, that's in the 1700s, so that is really around the time just before folks like our favorite original American enophile Thomas Jefferson really started to ship wines internationally, and that was a very, very big thing. And then it wasn't even until the late 70s, until 1979, that the U.S. set the standard for a bottle of wine at 750 milliliters, which was very magnanimous of us using the metric system, I think. But it was quickly adopted by the rest of the world as the standard for a bottle of wine. And thence we have various other sizes of wine. I wanted to mention those really quickly. Of course, you have your standard 750, and it is referred to as a standard or one bottle. You may have heard of magnums. Those are 1.5 liters, so two bottles of wine. Double magnums are 3 liters. And then you get into things that start to be named for biblical kings, the Methuselahs, the Salamanzars, the Belshazzars, the Nebuchadnezzars, which is a 15-liter bottle. Mm. And God help
Kerry
us all.
Kerry calls that the weekend.
The weekend. The weekender. it's fantastic stuff. And if you're ever lucky, I'm a huge advocate of large format bottles. So if you're ever able to pick one up and have one for a party, break one open. It looks so cool, and it's super awesome. Not a lot of screw caps in those, so set yourself up with a quality corkscrew if you're going to be going after that. But just to give you a thought, and so I don't know if folks out there have seen, there's still a couple of odd bottles on the market from the Franken region of Germany. You often see these kind of basketball shape. They're flat, but they're kind of round and weird. And those, strangely enough, actually are meant to stack. They did it, they're Germans. They're not doing this randomly. They actually stack with themselves, but they certainly are terrible for retail. So they've fallen out of favor for that reason. But shipping-wise, they were actually very stable. And then, of course, we have the bottle that we're having today, which is the strangest 700. This is a 750-milliliter bottle, but it looks like it's got to be 700 or less. It's very squat and strange, and the sides are slightly sloped out. And I absolutely can't stand it as a retailer, but it's one of my favorite wines in my shop, so I put up with it. this is a Pinot Grigio, for anyone listening and wondering. And again, a wonderful Pinot Grigio. It is organically farmed. It is from the Venezia, so northwestern Italy, called Redentore. And it's like an ugly dog. Like, I love the bottle for that reason, because it's so annoying that I think it's adorable. And the wine is absolutely exquisite. I mean, it's just bursting with fruit.
Gosh,
right now.
Good.
Especially, I mean, it's like,
well,
it's,
this is so much better than the last unusual shaped bottle I enjoyed, which was back in college.
Yes, Matus, perhaps.
Get juiced on Matus and just loose, as Elton John would say.
That's funny you mentioned that. That was another one of the last vestiges of the terrible bottle phase, is Matus and Lancers. Those are still out there, and I have no idea what to do with them. But they're fantastic. But just for all you folks out there ever giving thought to like how we got to this place, it hasn't been long, and it's been sort of a funny road, but next time you're enjoying your bottle of wine, give thought to that, and also give thought to just how much glass is being used in some of these bottles of wine now. It's an interesting part of the prestige part of it, the weight. I don't know that I agree with it necessarily for all sorts of earth-friendly motives, but kind of an interesting new subsection that we're starting to deal with is very, very heavy, inexpensive bottles, as if they're trying to all flash. But so next week, as I said, we're going to talk a little bit. We spent a month with it last year, but we'll just touch on the various closure methods, cork and Stelvin and screw cap and all that. And then we'll move on to boxes and cans, and then we'll be in spring, baby. I can't wait.
I just want to go home now and finish this bottle. This is remarkably good.
Cool. And hey, just a quick note. This month we're having our tasting on the third Thursday, which is next Thursday. So come on out. The 16th, we're going to be trying boxed and canned wines to change your mind. They're stigma busters. So check them out.
And in 15 seconds or less, peanuts too? Did I see
peanuts?
Oh,
and the peanuts. Oh, so good.
Yeah.
I'm such a peanut fiend. But yeah, plantation peanuts are our specialty feature of the week. And oh, they're not to be missed. We've got honey roasted and salt and pepper. Get them.
Woo. Message in the bottle. Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese.